On today's episode, our guest is a Jewish rabbi. He kept his abuse hidden about a family's trusted friend. How he turned this horrific incident into helping others. You definitely don't want to miss this episode.
WAM Safety. The WAM Safety Podcast with Wendy Jensen Nichols and Paul Ferber.
I am so honored to have Rabbi with us today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me, Wendy. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You bet. Tell us a little bit about your history and about you, if you don't mind.
So I believe it's hard to check this statistically and historically. I think I'm the first rabbi serving in Utah that was raised in Utah. Okay. My parents moved out here in 1992 to start the synagogue that I now work for. So I was raised kind of on the job, awesome. Son of the rabbi, with all of the stuff that comes with that sort of territory. And I suppose it wasn't too bad of a watch, as when I grew up, it was something which I wanted to pursue for myself. And so I moved back here with my wife in 2014 to work for that synagogue, and I've been an ordained and practicing rabbi since then, which, being a rabbi in Salt Lake City, is, I'd call it unusual.
Absolutely.
Definitely brings with it a number of different realities that I think most people are not privy to, and it's not part of their regular or usual experience. And in addition to all of that, you know, it's a full-time job and a career that I love very much and that I'm very grateful to call my own. In addition to all of that, in 2019, next month will be 4 years, I came out publicly about a decade of child sexual abuse that I had undergone at the hands of a family caregiver.
Oh, wow.
I came out as part of the criminal justice process. It was the first time I testified in court was that day, and my story ran in the Deseret News that day, and it's taken on kind of a full-time career of its own. That work in the advocacy space and trying to create a better path forward and a better future for people who have gone through similar experiences has created its own unique set of circumstances. And so for me, on an average day, life looks like balancing both of those careers and still serving as a rabbi, which is a career that I'm extremely passionate about and a career that I'm very grateful for, and also working in the advocacy space. It's a very unique intersection to find yourself at.
Absolutely. And not only that, but you're a new father again.
I'm a father for the third time. My wife and I had a baby boy last Saturday, so on the 7th. So that's been a tremendous, tremendous blessing. And our youngest, before he was born, was 5 and a half. And so, you know, it is like riding a bike, I think. You know, you feel like you're out of practice a little bit, and then certain realities just kind of kick back in. So not a ton of sleep, but a lot of newborn snuggles, and about as good as you can ask for.
I love it. Congratulations. That's so exciting. That's amazing. You have a lot that you're involved in, and we appreciate you sincerely for all your hard work on all aspects of that. Your incredible dad, all the work that you do with your church, and then as an advocate, like, we sincerely appreciate all that you're doing to help so many people. So thank you for being here and sharing your story. I think it's so powerful, and it'll help so many people.
Thank you for that.
You bet. This will be great. So maybe take us back before that. So had you never told anybody or anything before this whole court hearing and stuff came up? How and where did this take place? Do you mind sharing some details like that with us?
So I was raised, as mentioned, in somewhat of a religious household. Sex was not something that we talked about at all, I'd say.
Right.
We don't engage in premarital sex in our community. We don't date for, you know, just for fun. We kind of date for marriage once we're serious about getting married. And so for the longest time, for me, the sexual abuse began when I was 8 years old. I had pretty seriously carried that with me, operating under the impression that everything that had happened was really my fault. And I think there's a tremendous misunderstanding around why survivors don't report, that there's some sort of fear or protection that they're offering for the person who's harming them. And for me personally, it was a lot more about self-preservation than it was about having some sort of fear or protection for the person that was doing this for me. In my mind, not reporting was a decision that I was making so that I wouldn't get in trouble, as ridiculous as that sounds, but that was the reality at that point. And so I carried it with me for a very, very long time. And it's actually interesting doing this recording just days after becoming a dad for the third time. I got married. My wife and I had our first child in 2015. And looking back, I think that having carried a lifetime of shame around with me, I think it really was fatherhood on a certain level that really kind of broke the camel's back. Mm-hmm. And it was shortly after becoming a dad for the first time that I became such a shell of myself that I eventually couldn't fight anymore, and I went to therapy. And that's where I disclosed in that sort of setting, which ultimately led to reporting to law enforcement. But make a long story short, it was something which I carried around for a very, very long time. And statistically, we know that survivors of child sexual abuse carry that sort of thing around for decades till they're ready to tell, which I think is an important guide to help us look at how we structure a system to encourage those disclosures and to welcome those disclosures and from a variety of perspectives. For me, that was life. That was the only version of reality that I knew.
After experiencing that, what changes have you made to help protect your kids now?
I love that question. So I often tell the story. I was abused by a babysitter, a family caregiver. Before I told my story widely, I told members of the family, you know, close friends who I didn't want them reading about it on the internet and wanted them to hear it from me directly. And so I told a cousin of mine who also serves as a rabbi, lives on a college campus back east. And I shared with him what had happened, and he was kind of shook up. This was someone I had grown up with. We were pretty close. Mm-hmm. And he calls me back a few minutes later and he says, "Look, I just want to let you know, I was so taken by what you said, and you talked about it happening at the hands of a babysitter, that when I got off the phone with you, my wife and I, our kids have a number of nannies that watch them at various times of the week. My wife and I called up all those babysitters and fired them all. Just got rid of all the babysitters because we were so bothered by what had happened to you." And right. I remember in the moment appreciating the sentiment, but to really specifically answer your question, I don't think that what has happened to me has made me any more of a helicopter parent than I was before I disclosed. And I think if, on the contrary, if there's one thing that has really shifted for me, it's the understanding, given everything that I have been through, that there is no foolproof mechanism that parents can engage in to guarantee that their children will never cross paths with someone who seeks to do them harm. You can lock them in a closet in your home, and, mm-hmm. and then you'll guarantee they don't bump into anybody with nefarious intentions.
So true.
But short of that, they're going to go out there and they're going to live in a big world, in a scary world, in an ever-changing world, and who knows who they're going to run into. And so I don't know that we can wall them off from anyone with negative intentions in any way.
Right.
What we can do, I think, and what we must do is to create an environment where, God forbid, should they ever cross paths with someone who makes them uncomfortable or who crosses a boundary or who does something which is in the gray area in the remotest way, that they know they can always come back and share that with us when they feel like they've been made to feel compromised in a situation. They feel that safety, they feel that love, they feel that acceptance, they don't feel any sort of judgment, and they know that in any sort of situation, they can share that with us. I think that's our responsibility as parents. We can't bubble wrap them. We can't
right.
bubble wrap our children, but what we can do is we can empower them and we can share with them the voice that they have and the ability that they have to speak up and create a world where they are welcome to do that in any sort of situation they find themselves in.
I absolutely love that because you're so right on. That's exactly how I feel, that we need to help educate our kids, because you're right. We can't bubble wrap them. We would love to, right? And keep them little forever, but we want them to grow up and have those experiences and enjoy life because there's so many great things out there. But unfortunately, there does lie that evil. And so we have to protect them. And I think you're right, by educating them, letting them know we support them and we're always here and we have their back and we trust and we believe them, and to be aware. That's the number one, I think, the key, right?
I agree. Awareness and education.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really kind of become an important reality around this is preventative education is important.
Mm-hmm.
Preventative education is really important, and giving our kids those tools is really important. Also, at times, I feel like an overabundant focus on preventative education almost lulls us into a false sense of security, that if we as parents have done the work within the space of preventative education, we've done our part, we've checked that box, and we're good to go. And I feel like the attitude that that creates subconsciously is that if anything happens to a child who has received an adequate amount of preventative education, that's on them, right? You know, we educated them, you know, we taught them whatever it is they needed to know. And now if something unfortunate happens, sorry, man, like, you know, we did our part and that's really kind of your fault. And I feel that that's inaccurate. Mm-hmm. I feel like the reality is that children find themselves in compromised situations regardless of the education that they may or may not have gotten. And it really goes beyond that. It's about the education and it's about the subconscious environment that we create for our children, the space that we create for our children, that they always have someone to turn to.
Absolutely. I think you're right. And we definitely need to make sure that we're spending that time with them. Because I think the closer you are with them and the more time you spend, they feel like, okay, I have that close relationship that I can share anything or tell my parents anything that's going on. Or if they have one of those other individuals, I like to say you have a couple of other people like in your pack, right, that you can go to share information with that will always support you and back you up. I think that's key.
You know, I have a colleague who says, and I've heard this idea from him a few months ago, and it's really blown my mind since then. As a father myself, I have a colleague who says that there are two types of dads in the world. And the same thing applies to moms and teachers and human beings, but he uses dads as the example. And he says there are some kids, 17 years old, they're driving the family car for one of the first times and they get into a wreck. They ding the car, whatever the case is. Some of those kids, in the moment that that happens, their initial reaction would be, oh my God, my dad is going to kill me.
Right.
And some kids are going to have the reaction of, oh my God, I need to call my dad right now.
Right.
And his thought process is, which sort of dad do your kids think you are? And it's a very subtle difference. You know, if you're, I don't have a 16-year-old, but if you're, you know, if you're a teenager, crashed a family car, would their initial thought process be, oh my God, my dad is going to kill me, or I need to call my dad right now because he's going to know what to do and he's going to get me out of the situation. He's going to help me. Exactly. You know, and the fact that the car is going to need some work or more than that, that's of less importance right now. I'm okay. I'm healthy. I'm safe. And that's what matters. And I think you're right. I think it's about spending time with our kids and creating that environment where they can feel that subconscious safety.
Absolutely. And I love that because you're right. That's kind of what I try to use. So I use this funny, creepy taxidermy coyote as kind of like our little mascot. And the reason for him is to be able to use him as a good example of like, okay, who's some of those other people in your pact? So maybe like you said, maybe my dad is the one that he's going to kill me because I wrecked the car. And I really accidentally did that when I was a teenager and I knew I would be grounded for life. And so it's like, okay, so if I can't share that with him, then who's somebody else in my pact of that coyote group, right? So is it your mom? Is it a teacher? Is it a best friend, a neighbor, a cousin, whoever that may be, right? And so if you have somebody you can go to share that information, then it makes it a little easier. And then I think the key is once that person does share, what do they do about it? Are they actually going to support and help you get help? Or do they just kind of brush it under the carpet and it just lies there and then it continues to fester? I heard somebody use an analogy. It's kind of like getting a cut. If you just let it fester and you don't take care of it, it continues to get infected and eventually you could get it amputated, right? Because it gets so bad. And that's what could happen to us if we hold that type of horrific stuff like abuse or anything like that. And so I think that's why it's important to get support and help and to get that first aid and to be that person that somebody could count on to help you.
And I think that for a lot of people, when we speak about disclosures, people are concerned, you know, if someone comes to me and discloses an adverse reality they've been through in their life, what am I supposed to do, you know, in that moment? And I often share with people that, I mean, first and foremost, not much. You know, there's not an expectation that someone is going to come to you and disclose to you something profoundly painful or traumatic, and you're going to say something that is going to just alleviate all of their pain, and you're going to say the magic words, and they're going to feel all better. You know, the person who's sharing that is not operating under that premise, and you're not operating under that premise, and that's not a realistic expectation. I think more often than not, what someone wants in that situation is just to be heard. Mm-hmm. And I think that, especially within the realm of child abuse, there's a concern if a child comes and shares that with me, what do they want me to do? Mm-hmm. Who do they want me to call? And specifically within a familial environment, more often than not, they just want to be heard. They don't need you to jump off the couch and get your phone and start calling and burn the town down and go crazy. And down the road, there might well be an opportunity for that. And there might well be a place for that. But right now, more than anything, all they want is to be heard. And really, more than anything, the value of being heard and understood and validated in that moment is something which cannot be overvalued. And how much that means to people is so profoundly meaningful and valuable. And I think it's important to bear that in mind. I often tell parents or loved ones who have received a disclosure and, you know, they don't know what to do with that. I said, you know, this child in your life knows how many adults, you know, knows hundreds of adults that fill a number of different roles in this child's life. And they have chosen to disclose to you. Out of all the adults they know in this world, they have chosen to share this highly sensitive piece of information that they've shared with nobody else. They've decided to share that with you. What does that say to you about the value that you have in that child's life? You are someone that is so safe for them and understands them and respects them and gives them that space that they crave. And really, that's all they want you to keep on doing, is to be that safe person in their life, and not necessarily to be the one that is going to fix all of their problems and not try to be the person that's going to be Superman in their life, but be safe, be respectful, be a good listener, just be there and receive that conversation. And I think you'll find that that means more to the child than anything else.
I agree. And to be honest with you, that's why we actually started this whole podcast and our whole whamsafety.com, is so that we could also provide resources for people to go in, and if somebody has been sexually abused or need help or suicidal, whatever it may be, they can go to whamsafety.com and look at those resources and get help for whatever it may be. That's a tough situation to be in. And you're like, gosh, I've never been in this type of situation before. How do I help, or what do I do? And maybe to get them out of that situation that they're in, or to get them further help, that's a good resource for them too. Like you said, they definitely want to be heard because they trust you to share that information. And wow, that's amazing that they love you that much, that they're willing to open up and share and say these horrible things are going on. And then, like, you're not really sure what to do with it, like you said. And then that's a great guide for you to go in and look at these resources to get them some support and help. And it could be like, maybe they need some counseling, or maybe they need some animal therapy or horse therapy or whatever it may be. But those resources are on there for them. That's what I think is so great, is that we're able to help give people some ideas of what to do, because that's a tough situation to be in.
I love that. And I think that people find that they need that more than they might realize. And I think that we live in a society where people are opening up about it more and more. And I think that the loved adults and the trusted adults and the safe adults in their life are going to need those resources more and more. And I think having a place to go to where those resources are available is invaluable.
Absolutely. I agree. Thank you so much. Because yes, that's actually what our whole platform is, creating a place so that people can get some support and help and see that other people have gone through such horrific experiences and what to do, because none of us have been in those situations before, and kind of give us a guide and support. So that's why we actually started this entire whamsafety.com, to help others.
That's incredible.
So yes, and we're a big advocate, like you said too. We're trying to help change the laws, and that's one thing we're working on with the legislation here, not only in Utah, but across the country, and changing the laws against those people that offend our children. Very passionate about that. I'm actually going down this week to meet with the legislation on changing some of those bills, and we're working with some of the other states on that as well. So that's super exciting. And then getting more education into the schools and the homes, into the parents, because unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize, like in your situation, that it happens in your own home. The majority of abuse happens with somebody that you know, somebody that you love. A lot of times it's in your home, it's your neighbors, it's your friends, it's your community, something like that.
I think the statistics are over 90, that over 90% of these episodes happen with someone who, as they say, is near and dear to the child. Yeah, I think as that data becomes more available, the way we think about it is shifting drastically. And I think that's important. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So what ended up happening with your abuser?
She was prosecuted. She was found guilty. And she is currently doing a very long time at the Utah State Prison.
Okay, that's wonderful news. Good. And do you know, had she also done it to several other people, or was it just you?
At the moment, I had been the only victim that had come forward. To date, another male victim has come forward. And, you know, if I'm being honest, I think from a speculatory standpoint, I do think there are others out there. And I think that, you know, as mentioned, we need to create an environment where those brave people will be ready to come forward whenever it feels right.
Absolutely. I agree. And I think, especially as a male, because it seems like it's sometimes maybe a little more even difficult for a man to bring it forward that, hey, I got abused as well. Because as we're seeing, like, the statistics state, before it was women were a little bit higher. And as we've seen over the years, that the boys and men are coming up towards. And I think a lot of it goes underreported. And so I kind of think it's almost about the same. But I think a lot of times, maybe just because of the way we were raised, that the men don't tend to bring it up as much.
I'd agree. I think that society's changing.
Yes.
In that sense, I think that we can sit and moan and groan about how society is not working at the moment. And all we can really do is try and change that. And I'm grateful to see that change start happening more and more.
I love it. Same. Me too. And that's what I love about you coming and sharing your story with us. I think it's so powerful so that other people can see, you know what? I went through this horrific thing, and that's what we try to share here, is that we might have gone through a horrible time, but yet we were able to overcome it and just share the positive and the power that's come from it. And you're an amazing example of that. So thank you so much for sharing your story. I know it's going to help so many people out there.
Thank you, Wendy. Appreciate that.
You bet. Thank you.
Wham of safety. The Wham Safety Podcast with Wendy Jensen Nichols and Paul Ferber.
Wham! WhamSafety.com.